Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, for the second part of Paola's interview with Ian Reeder.
You are currently working on another book, which is a little bit of a broader introduction.
I finished it. It's in press.
There you go. It's in press. Which is a short introduction.
It's Oxford University Press. It's their very short introduction series, and it's the very short introduction to Pilgrimage. I believe it's number 427 in the series, they told me the other day. It's got photographs in it as well. It's about 35,000 words in all, and it's a general introduction for the general reader, but it's not an academic book, so it doesn't go on about theories and so on. But what it does do is it looks at a number of general themes, some of them I've talked about today, about interpretations of pilgrimage, origins, terminologies, and I make the point in there that the word pilgrimage, of course, comes, and again, this is an important point to note, that pilgrimage is a Christian term. I mean, it's originally a Latin term. It means as a wandering, going into other places and so on, but it then gets associated with Christianity and with worship. But the type of practice is a fairly universal one, and I point out there are different terminologies in different languages, like in Japanese there's a number of terms that can be translated as pilgrimage and so on. And I look at the pilgrimages around the world. I look at issues like landscape, geography, why they play a part sometimes. But I also look at tourism, I look at commercial elements, and I also look at what is called secular pilgrimage. Oh, another theme, of course, is what people buy at pilgrimage sites. Now, there's been a tendency, again, this is a theme that is in the previous book, in the Marketplace book too, there's been a tendency to write off stuff that's sold around shrines as horrible kitsch and demeaning to pilgrimage. My argument is that the stuff that's sold around pilgrimage sites is very important. It's very much part of the pilgrimage process. I've talked to pilgrims in shrines and temples from Japan to Ireland and I've listened to them discuss with each other what they're going to buy for what relative and so on. And the buying of stuff is very, very important. It doesn't matter if it looks to some eyes quite aesthetically unappealing and kitschy. That's not the point. And these items, if you want to talk about anything as sacred, it's the plastic statuettes of the Virgin Mary, the, as Bob Dylan called them, the flesh-coloured Christs that glow in the dark. Those are the things that my Kobodaishi sake bottle, which was wonderful. It was spiritual when I received it. It wasn't after I'd drunk the sake. But those things are important.
I'm a proud owner of the Kobodaishi earrings from my Shikoku pilgrimage.
Yeah. Well, I've got a Kobodaishi keychain that was given to me by the somebody who ran a business providing pilgrimage gear and accoutrements, who said to me, this is this year's product, new thing. And he said that some people do Shikoku, the pilgrimage, every year. And every year they want something new from it. So there is a pressure on the temples and the merchants to keep providing new stuff. So it's not just that the pilgrims want these things too. That's part of the process. Anyway, so I have stuff about souvenirs too. In the book, I have a rather interesting story that comes from a study of Wittenberg in Germany, where Martin Luther King put up his 95 theses. You know, the origins of Protestantism, and the Barry Stevenson, who wrote the really good study of this of Wittenberg's festival and so on, and the pilgrims that go there, has a great story where a Canadian Lutheran pastor is talking about the stuff that's being sold, and he's okay with a Martin Luther mug but he's disturbed because they're also selling Martin Luther socks. And it kind of, I raised the question, where do you draw the line? You know, is a mug okay and socks not? But it's one of the fascinating things to me about pilgrimage is what's sold around the sites. And I argue it's very much part of the construction of the sacred. Anyway, I have a little bit about that in the OUP book as well. And also a section, which I don't talk about in Pilgrimage in the Marketplace, about what is called secular pilgrimage, which has become a big topic. My friend Tony Walter and I, in 1993, did a book called Pilgrimage in Popular Culture, which we looked at pilgrimages. We had chapters by different people. We looked at pilgrimages, like we looked at Wargrave Pilgrimage. We looked at Graceland, which is Elvis Presley's home. We had different people write some of these chapters, but we looked at different topics and asked whether the term pilgrimage could be taken out of the purely religion, shrine, temple, church context and applied elsewhere. And that theme has developed in a number of other works over the years. And I have a particular chapter on it in the OUP book because I think it's an important one. The way that we treat, and people treat, say, the house of a famous rock star or the grave of a rock star, Elvis's grave in the Meditation Garden, which is surrounded by all sorts of religious imagery, statues of Jesus. But of course, Elvis, who is far more important than that, Jim Morrison's grave in Paris, which has been a pilgrimage site for a number of people. And nowadays, obviously another pilgrimage that's being developed and that is being specifically labelled as a pilgrimage is to do with Nelson Mandela. His cell on Robben Island, where he was incarcerated, has become a site. Even while Mandela was alive, it was a must-visit site for any foreign dignitary going to South Africa. When Barack Obama visited South Africa, he went to the Robben Island and to the cell where Mandela was incarcerated, and the media reports all talked about Obama's pilgrimage. After Mandela died, the South African Tourism Board started to talk about building introducing a kind of what they call Madiba's journey, a pilgrimage to the life of Nelson Mandela. And that, you know, I'm very interested in the appropriation or the use of the term pilgrimage in all sorts of contexts. All this came out of meeting various people at different conferences to talk about discussing pilgrimage. I have a chapter on that, looking at the graves of political found leaders, rock stars, and of course, particularly Elvis. And there's a wonderful photograph in the book, which was taken by a friend called Tommy Mendel, who is a Swiss scholar anthropologist who makes films and makes films about pilgrimage. And he's done two or three very good films, one on Shikoku, one on travellers, where he contrasts a traveller going, it's called Common Roads, and he contrasts people going to a traveller going around, doing the kind of traveller's trail around Southeast Asia with another young lady who goes and walks to Santiago.
Right.
Neither of them say that they're particularly religious, but they come out with all this, you know, kind of stuff as they go along, which can be seen as quote-unquote spiritual and so on. Anyway, he allowed me to use some of his photographs for the book very kindly, including a great one of souvenirs at Einsiedeln, the Swiss Catholic pilgrimage site that he took me to in a few years ago, but also a great shot at Graceland, Elvis's house, which says, "Elvis, I know you sit at the right hand of the Lord."
Right.
And that really sums things up. I mean, I will confess too that Graceland is one of my favorite. You know, I've been to Graceland a couple of times in 1996 with a Japanese friend, colleague. We were at a conference nearby and we drove down to Graceland to make a pilgrimage there. And last year when I was traveling in the States with my wife and my son, we stayed in the Days Inn, which is a kind of Elvis themed motel opposite Graceland, and we went to Graceland. And of course, I'm not religious, but Elvis was something special, you know.
That's great.
So
pilgrimage has many faces.
Yeah.
And it can be discussed in various different ways with the meanings attached to it, depending on the angle.
It does struck me that the way that fans sometimes engage with sites is so fascinating. I mean, when we were at Graceland watching... I mean, some people were there just because it was a tourist place, but some people come, people with Elvis tattoos and talking about how they come every year. Mm. I mean, Elvis Memorial Week I haven't been there, but Elvis Memorial Week in August every year, they have candlelit vigils. People still talk about kind of things like healing. They kind of virtually pray to Elvis. So there is that dimension to it. It's the development of a kind of religious theme. And I think you can see this in a number of places. Just to talk again about Japan, one of the most fascinating modern new things is that you're now getting a new kind of phenomenon, which is called... in fact, it uses the term seichi junre. Seichi means sacred place pilgrimage. But the seichi, the sacred places, are actually places that appear in manga, in cartoons or in animation films.
Yeah.
And if they are geographically located, like fans of anime will go to them. And now places are actually publicising themselves as anime pilgrimage centres. There's a little example in the OUP book about a shrine, a relatively unknown shrine at the time, Oshinomiya Shrine in Saitama, that appeared in, I believe it was an anime, and suddenly anime fans started going there and hanging up votive tablets, because I think they appear in the anime. And the shrine was really kind of amazed at first, and over a period of 5 years, the number of people who made visits there at the New Year Hatsumode pilgrimage to the shrine, people make pilgrimages to shrines at New Year to pray for good luck in the coming year, the number of people going to that shrine, I think, increased fivefold in a very short space of time. A colleague, Mark McWilliams from the United States. Mark does some interesting work on... He's done interesting work in the past on pilgrimage, and he's also done a lot of work on anime, manga in religious contexts. And he says now that one of the pilgrimages he's done work on is the Chichibu pilgrimage, which is a canon based around the Bodhisattva canon in Chichibu, which is about an hour and a half from Tokyo by train. It's a lovely little area. It takes 3 or 4 days to walk and do the pilgrimage. In recent years, the numbers on the Chichibu pilgrimage have declined. It's become more of a hiking trail. If you go out there on a Sunday, people are getting off the train and they're going hiking along the pilgrimage route. But it has lost support over the years. But in recent times, Chichibu, that area, appeared in a famous... I cannot remember now whether it was an anime or a manga. Mm. I'm not sure which. But that has led to a kind of boom in people going to Chichibu to do this sacred pilgrimage route around the sites associated with the anime. And you've got this kind of interesting contrast of an old traditional religious pilgrimage centered around Buddhist temples, which appears to be declining, and then this new boost of apparently secular young fans going to the place, which is kind of causing an interesting dynamic to happen in the region.
It almost, some people would take it as a suggestion that young people are engaging with some sacred sites, but there's obviously the question of motivation.
Question of motivation, question of, again, it goes back to that idea of what's a sacred site, you know, the concept of the sacred. The use of the term seichi, sacred, apparently seichi means its combination of two ideograms meaning holy and place. And of course, you talk about pilgrimage sites as seichi. But using the term seichi junrei and using the term seichi about places that appear in manga or anime raises a big question because it's claiming that these are special. It goes back to my point that anywhere can be, inverted commas, sacred. It raises questions about the meaning of the sacred, which, as I said, is not something that can be divorced from the so-called mundane or profane. You know, anywhere can be either. Just to underline that point, very recently there was a tragedy in Japan when Mount Ontake unexpectedly erupted and killed a number of people. Mount Ontake is a sacred mountain. It's the centre of Ontake-kyo, a kind of religious order that venerates Mount Ontake and does pilgrimages sense of Ontake. It's a place where, if you look at Carmen Blacker's wonderful book, The Catalpa Bo, which is a study of shamanic practices and ascetic practices in Japan, written in the 1960s, 70s, it's a place where people went up to do seances and spirit possession rituals and so on. It still happens. I've interviewed people who've done the religious ascent with Ontake-kyo of Ontake 200 or 300 times. But it's also a hiking place. And I think there's a funiki. I think you can go up there on a cable car, on a railway, whatever, too. So you can, you get all these, the top of the mountain is sacred to Ontake-kyo, and there's religious rituals going on. There's a shrine up there. And there are hikers, there are tourists, there are people coming up by mechanized means. It's supposed, if you looked at them, they're doing it as a tourist enterprise. It's a, inverted commas, a profane activity. But it's a sacred site to Ontake. It's both at the same time. And the idea that we try and separate these things out, I think, is highly problematic.
That's great. So on that note, we're going to finish there.
Okay.
If that's okay. It has been great. So thank you very much.
Well, that was an excellent interview. And we hope that you enjoyed getting the full two parts of it. Very good to hear about Ian's very short introduction to pilgrimage as well. That interview touched on a number of themes, which of course tie into a few previous podcasts that we've had here at the RSP. Alex Norman's interview on spiritual tourism is springing to mind, as well as Oona Mahony's interview on the geographies of religion and the secular in Ireland, where he talked a lot about various pilgrimages to holy sites or secular sites in Ireland, and how these can be considered pilgrimages or tourism or a mixture of both.
It's an interesting alternative to packaging religious lives in terms of, you know, historical traditions, you know, historical continuities. Rather, we can organise it spatially instead, and it really underlines the, I don't want to say diversity, the messy vagueness on the ground of these kind of things, and how, you know, how mixed up all of these things are, really, when you look at it from a different point of view.
And absolutely. And if we take the official interpretation of an event as a pilgrimage, and if we take the statements that people will make about why they have done things, this may not, you know, that doesn't reflect the, quote, whole reality or whole truth, because, you know, whether the official reason is the actual, and again, this is all in scare quotes, actual reasons for doing things.
And, of course, the you know, the boundary between what's pilgrimage and what's simply travel is reinforces that actually, you know, what's the line between the religious and the secular? Are, you know, pilgrimages, say, to, you know, Jim Morrison's grave or, you know, Karl Marx's grave, you know, are these pilgrimages?
Well, no, because they're not religious, Dave. but exactly, though.
But
exactly,
as much, if not more, meaningful for certain people.
And yeah, that all comes from the problem whereby we assume that because someone's on a pilgrimage, that it has to be meaningful, or that they haven't just, as Ian Reeder just discussed, they used the opportunity to see the world. You know, particularly throughout history, pilgrimage or hey, even going on a crusade was, you know, it was a way to see the world.
Indeed, indeed.
So yeah, nice complicating these binaries that we uncritically use quite often.
Very much so, but there's one binary which I'm quite excited about, and that's the fact that we've got two responses this week.
Do we?
We do. They are...
This is news to me, listener.
They are Claire Miller Skrillets from University of Colorado, and Alex Norman.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great. See, this is part of our, you know, diversifying of the RSP team. Kevin is working away there, sorting responses, and I, you know, I'm a co-captain of a ship who doesn't know what's going on in the engine room.
Delegation is very important. So I would assume that Alex is going to be talking about this idea of tourism and pilgrimage, and maybe Claire will be talking more about the, you know, religion in Japan aspect of it. But yeah. Either way, you know, a lot of content this week in the Religious Studies Project.
Yeah. So with that note, we should probably shut up now. Keep saying about the BASR. We should always keep mentioning the British Association for the Study of Religions, because they are awesome. Remember, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes... Google Plus, it's still there. It's still there. But, you know, it might have gone the way of the dinosaurs, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps.
And don't forget our Amazon links. But for now... Oh, next week!
Next week it's me talking to Joe Webster from Queen's University in Belfast on the subject of the Brethren in Scotland. We'll tell you a little bit more about that next week. But for now...
Thanks for listening.